Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Will Smith is back in quest mode, looking for natural wonders on the new Disney Plus series, Welcome to Earth. Executive producer Jane Root joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. We'll reconnect next half hour with popular author and entertainment news journalist Ray Richmond, the author of the best-selling book, Betty White, 100 Remarkable Moments in Extraordinary Life. And it wouldn't be a holiday season without a musical TV presentation featuring the Tabernacle Choir, a.k.a. the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. A 20-year retrospective of choir Christmas offerings debuts tonight on PBS and Thursday on BYU TV. Hear producer Jim Bell during our final 30 minutes. Also ahead, Golden Globe television nominations, Dr. Oz waxes off TV, The Good Dish waxes on, and a new classic trivia question with a new prize in play. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I'm presenting on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Verbal, Reason, and Amazon Music. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 52 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. And on this Monday of pre-Christmas week 2021, we welcome you again to the program all about TV's current and future. We have some wonderful guests coming away over the next 90 minutes. And before we get to all of that, we want to join everybody at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, our podcast affiliates, in offering our prayers, thoughts, condolences, and support to everybody that's been impacted by the incredible array of tornadoes that touched down in 7 states from Arkansas to Ohio over Friday night into Saturday. If you've seen the drone camera shots going overhead, it's the kind of photography and videos that will take your heart away. What the folks in those states are going through, especially Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, et cetera, is just absolutely incomprehensible. And what is great is that people are coming together to help each other. And that is a very special thing. And good news, it may be possible to say that something miraculous is happening. Right now, the latest word is that about 25 people did perish in this situation. However, the possible predictions of 50 to 100, it may actually be, the result may be better forecast. Keep your fingers crossed. And again, thoughts, prayers, et cetera, go to all the people dealing with this tragedy. And hopefully we'll recover and overcome from it. If you have a question or comment for our guests, make that call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. Your catch is across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. We have our chat room in business, too. It's SimonApple04 by name, so use that. Please do. And you'll find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Go on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions of being live with you. Jane Root from the new Disney Plus series, Welcome to Earth, and a brand new National Geographic series that premieres on New Year's night. We'll have her from Washington, D.C. after these news notes. TV or no TV home on NBC next month. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association is going forward with handing out Golden Globe Awards. Nominations came out this morning, and on the TV side, there's a possibility that for the first time ever, a series not made in the USA can win a major award. Lupin from France and Squid Game from South Korea, both going to viewers via Netflix, are up for Best Drama with The Morning Show, Pose, and Succession. Best comedy nominees are The Great, Hacks, Only Murders in the Building, Ted Lasso, and Reservation Dogs. Up for Best Miniseries, Dope Sick, The Underground Railroad, Maid, Mayor of Easttown, and American Crime Story, Impeachment. The winners will be unveiled January 9th, the same day as the Critics' Choice Awards simulcast on the CW and TBS. Dr. Oz's syndicated TV run will wrap next month. The program's 13th season will be cut short due to Dr. Oz's recent decision to run for the U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania. Dr. Oz running stations in New York City and Philadelphia are already running syndicator Stoney's replacement weekday hour, The Good Dish, with Dr. Oz's daughter Daphne among the trio of co-hosts. For all the markets, the final original Dr. Oz episode will air on January 14th, with The Good Dish playing the following week. Now some quickies. Made-for-TV movie crafter Marvista Entertainment is now under Fox Entertainment ownership. Terms of the deal were kept confidential. Graphic novel series Surfside Girls will turn to an Apple TV Plus series co-starring Maya Sech and Yahya Gosselin. Season 2 of The Go Big Show goes forward on TBS January 6th. Snoop Dogg's 1990s murder trial will be dramatized in the Starz miniseries next year, titled Murder Was the Case. And GameStar Plus continues its WeFunder campaign with $4.8 million plus raised as of 2 hours ago. The campaign ends Friday night. And that is news notes for today. A couple of years ago, Will Smith decided to do a television series about what Earth is really like. The series was called One Strange Rock, and it premiered on National Geographic and earned rave reviews. It even went into a second season. We showcased One Strange Rock on this very program with the next person you're about to hear. And Will Smith, the production company, and powerful for that series, Newtopia, and our guests are all reunited again in a series that premiered last Wednesday on Disney Plus called Welcome to Earth. And that's not all. Newtopia has another series hosted by Rob Lowe that will premiere New Year's night at 9 p.m. Pacific time on Nat Geo. It's called The 80s Top 10. Joining us live from Washington, D.C., the key person behind Newtopia, executive producer, and former Discovery Channel executive, Jane Root. Jane, welcome back to our program.
Lovely to be back.
Same here. So how did you and Will Smith reunite?
Well, he, on One Strange Rock, he did a little bit of filming, but largely did narration. And he was like, you're not doing it again without me. It really came from Will. He wanted to go to those places. He said, like, he said in one of the films, he says, I'm 50. I've never slept in a tent. I've never swum in a lake. I'm scared of water. And it's time that I understood the world. And he just dives in full bore saying, let me experience the most wonderful things in the world. And so we helped him to do that.
How did you help him?
Well, we took him around the world. We took him to see the wildebeest in the Serengeti. We took him to right nearly a mile down to the bottom of the ocean off the Bahamas. We took him to abseil down ice ravines in Iceland. We took him to Namibia. We took him to all these different places and got him to experience things that people might not know about the world, some really surprising, amazing things. And he was, you know, he was just blown away. He's also, you know, what's great about working with Will is incredibly enthusiastic. What you see, you know, the person you hope Will Smith is, he absolutely is that person. And yet he's also, for someone who's been a hero in so many movies, he's not afraid to say when he's scared. And I think that ability to be scared about something is actually, it's very alluring. You feel for him, and you kind of feel like when he's working hard to get over his fear. I mean, he says at one point, my grandma always said, the best experiences are on the other side of fear. Then he kind of laughs and says, I really hope Gigi was right. So, you know, he throws himself into it.
Did Will put together this bucket list of places that he wanted to go and bring the cameras with, or there was a sort of a collaboration among you, him, and Darren Aronofsky, who also worked with both of you on One Strange Rock?
We suggested places to him, because we and where we thought he would really experience extraordinary things. He'd always wanted to see the wildebeest in the Serengeti. That had always, since he was a little kid, he'd always wanted to do that. Other things that we suggested. And then in the middle of making the series, COVID arrived. And so some of the places we wanted to go to, we couldn't. And we had to really think hard about where else to go. The answer to the COVID problem was to go to places that were even more isolated than we'd originally planned. We hadn't planned to go to Iceland. The thing about Iceland is once you get away from, you know, the center and the capital, you can be there with 120 people for days and days and not meet anyone. So we really chose those people just to keep places to keep everybody safe.
Well, speaking with Jane Root, she has re-collaborated with Will Smith and famous filmmaker Darren Aronofsky on Welcome to Earth. It premiered this past Wednesday on Disney Plus, available on smart TV sets and smart devices. And in a little while, we'll talk about another big project that is coming her way and your way. It's happening on New Year's night on National Geographic. It's called The 80s Top 10, hosted by Rob Lowe. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. Jane joins us live from Washington, D.C. this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom and Abba, I'm with you live from Nueva York, 52 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for Jane. Don't be shy. Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised. Remember When Hope Calls? That was the spinoff series of the popular Hallmark Channel program, When Calls the Heart. It ran 2 years ago on Hallmark Movies Now. Well, this weekend, it's back, but in a new location, GAC Family. That is the network that was put together by Bill Abbott, the former head of Hallmark Channel, that replaced Great American Country a few months ago. We'll meet executive producer of When Hope Calls, Brian Bird. He joins us live Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Of all the journeys, Jane, that Will took for this program, what did he find the most fascinating, most illuminating, and even, as you said, the most terrifying?
Well, I think the most terrifying, including for us on the crew, was the volcano, where he was climbing down towards the heart of a volcano, which exploded, which was kind of incredible. We were filming it just a few weeks after that volcano exploded in the South Pacific near Australia, killing lots and lots of tourists. And so we were super aware. And as he was climbing down with a blind volcanologist, Eric Weinmacher, who is one of the world's experts, but who works by, who's expert on the sound of volcanoes, it started to blow up all around us. Huge kind of car-sized boulders and boiling lava spitting up into the air. So that was pretty intense and pretty big. Some of the climbing ropes that people were using melted. It was that hot. So that was probably the most astounding. I think for Will, the most scary was going a mile down in the ocean. He doesn't like the water very much. He always says that his family's business was air conditioning, and they worked like crazy in the summer. So there was no trips to the beach for him. He learned to swim much later in life, and he still doesn't love it. He still really, really would rather not. So going that far down was a challenge. It was definitely a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Along the way, a number of National Geographic scientists, explorers, experts accompany Smith and your production team on these journeys. What kind of value did they bring to the production?
They were just fantastic. They brought kind of amounts of knowledge. They also held Will's hand and made him feel good about the world. And like Diva Amor, who goes to the bottom of the ocean with him, they really, their exuberance and knowledge, I think, was a real big part of making the experience so great. It was also the fact that they were, we chose the most exuberant, young, very diverse explorers that we could find. And they, you think of explorers as kind of old white guys, really, but that's like from the Victorian age. Now, explorers are people who are just passionate and committed and brave, and Will really loved bonding with them.
Talk about your relationship with Darren Aronofsky. Here's a sensational filmmaker. He's made a string of marvelous movies, whether it's The Fountain, The Wrestler, Black Swan, Noah, Requiem for a Dream, etc. It seems that for television, he has found more his calling in unscripted documentary work or miniseries work as opposed to scripted miniseries or series work.
We've had a fantastic collaboration with Darren, you know, who is an executive producer of the show. I mean, he brings like a visual storytelling style, which is his own. And it's amazing to watch him and his production partner, Auri Handel, kind of look at what we shot, make suggestions about how to do it. We've really learned so much from Darren. And I think for him, it feels like it's a really different experience. I think that's exciting. You know, like you spent your life becoming an absolute master in one genre. I think it's kind of really liberating to work in something a bit adjacent.
Was there any moment in putting this series together that you thought or Darren thought, Will is not going to get through this? This particular adventure in this particular corner of the world, this particular natural wonder, he's not going to make it. He's going to, get so frightened that, whoops, I think we may have made a mistake by being here.
No, we never thought that, although we did episode about bottom of the ocean. If you look very closely, you can see the fear radiating off his face. And you can also see the absolute delight when they get back to the surface. So I think that was definitely, that was pushing him a long way, you know. It really was. But he's a pro, you know. That's one of the things that makes it so great to work with him. He really kind of throws himself into it and doesn't complain, you know, puts up with all kind of uncomfortableness and problems and all of that. He gets on with it. He's like, yeah, I wanted to do this. This is me. So, you know, he's great like that.
You know, with so much experience that you have had in this kind of television work, is there any sort of tricks of the trade or any, you know, great secrets to learn about how to do this kind of television series? You know, given the fact that when you deal with anything of nature, as we have said numerous times on this program over the 14 plus years we've been doing it, you can't direct Mother Nature, you can't produce Mother Nature, you got to, like, wait for the moment to happen and just have the cameras be there and roll. What tricks have you learned in terms of, or what techniques have you learned to cope with that scenario?
Well, one of the big things is having the kind of resources that Working with Disney Plus gives you. You know, you can't do it on the cheap. You know, you've got to really, really put in the technical equipment. You've got to put in, I mean, some of the things that we did have never been done before, like using military drones, to film lions at night in the Serengeti. No one has ever done that. Flying a drone is pretty complex anyway. Flying one at night when you can't even see the drone, that's hard. So, you know, we had a lot of bringing expertise in from other worlds. But the other thing that we really did was to recognize that when you're working with someone like Will, although he gave us a lot of time, you mustn't waste time. You know, if you're filming something, normally you film something and then you all trundle over to the next filming place, next setup. You can't do that. You have to have 2 camera crews or 3 camera crews or 4 camera crews so that you can move from one place to another. And really, you know, it's like a feature film. You've just got to have all of that resource and all of that expertise to make it work. That's a big takeaway for me. It's also like the COVID thing was like being inventive. We ended up in Iceland. We really wanted to go to Iceland. This was pre-vaccine. And we knew that we would be safe enough in Iceland, where at that point they hadn't had any COVID tech cases, and it was incredibly remote. But there wasn't. We wanted to test everybody every single day. There wasn't enough of a testing facility there. So some people on the crew had some chemistry experience and medical experience. They set up our own testing site. We imported the chemicals. We didn't have enough chemicals in Iceland. And we then tested everybody for every day of the shoot. Then when we left, we gave the testing lab to the Icelandic government, who are still using it. Because it's like, you just got to do it. Sometimes you just got to do whatever you can do to make it work.
Welcome to Earth with Will Smith, now playing on Disney Plus, available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And in a moment, we're going to talk about another Utopia production that Jane Rood is executive producing. It's called The 80s Top 10. It is hosted by Rob Lowe, and it premieres on National Geographic January 1st, New Year's night, at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. If you have any questions or comments for Jane in our remaining moments when we're this half hour, well, get on the phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, next week, just like Thanksgiving, we will have a Christmas week triple header of programs on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. That's December 20th, 22nd, 23rd, all 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And on our December 20th edition, kicking off Christmas week, we'll have one of the key people behind Hub Entertainment Research. That's John Gerengock. We'll talk to him about with some predictions that he's just come out with today about where he sees TV going in 2022. You might be very surprised. That's all coming up Monday, kickoff of Christmas week 2021, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, starting on Monday. Jane, what's been the response of Disney Plus viewers so far to what you've done?
Oh, it's been fantastic. People have been so in love with it. We did a little premiere in Los Angeles, and what was amazing was to hear that many people laughing. You know, like, so we've made a lot of shows in different places I've worked about the amazingness of the natural world, but it's also, it was new to me to hear people really enjoying the humor in it, the fact that it's funny, the fact that Will is funny. All of that was kind of like a genre-busting kind of thing where we were bringing together a comedy star and incredible photography of things you've never seen before. And somebody, there was a review that somebody said it was like melon and prosciutto or apple pie and cheddar cheese. You wouldn't think they would go together, but they do. I loved that review because I just thought, yep, that's what we've been doing. And people seem to get it. People could feel like, you know, Will Smith's not David Attenborough. What's he doing exploring this stuff? Or they could have been like, you know, it's all too serious and scientific to get someone like Will to do. And in fact, cheddar cheese and apple pie.
Well, he is not the only superstar of film and TV you've been working with because coming up, as I mentioned, on New Year's night, you have another miniseries that is kicking off called The 80s Top 10. Talk about that miniseries that's coming to Nat Geo starting New Year's night and working with Rob Lowe on that.
This is a fun exploration of the best things in pop culture. So it has the best thing in 80s fashion, the best thing in 80s music. It's really having some fun with stuff that you kind of, and telling you some fun facts along the way about things you didn't know. So there's the, and one of my favorites is there's Streetwear, which is the fashion show. There's a show about ads and the best ads of the 80s. And with each of them, we have a little story to tell about what went on behind the scenes, why they're so great, why we all remember them. We rank them. There's a top 10, and we rank them by how 80s they were, how completely they felt, they feel 80s now, like only could happen then, and also how lasting they feel they are, how much they had an impact that still feels like it hangs on today. And that's pretty fun. You know, it's, and Rob is great. He's just so dry and witty and clever. He's the perfect 80s guy.
The first episode, which is on New Year's night, deals with water cooler moments. Everything from the Who Shot J.R. Mister on Dallas to something I was part of, the MTV first ever music video awards for Racing Musical. I remember that night. It was one whale of a night, and all that's fun. How did you pick the water cooler moments? Was it really tough or fairly easy?
We had a panel who we gave them a big list, and we got people to vote. It's an esteemed panel of people. And there was always some ones that didn't quite make the list, but there was a kind of consensus about it. You go, you know, oh, yes, absolutely, that deserves to be there. Like you're saying about the MTV Awards, you don't think of it perhaps immediately, but then you go, absolutely, I was there, I remember that, I watched that, kind of, wow. And some of them you just go, it still looks really great, doesn't it? It still feels like really surprising, really kind of a different kind of thing. So, yeah, that was how we got there. Kind of, I think it's a moment where I kind of love nostalgia shows, but I love them when they actually tell you something. You know, you feel like there's nothing new to find out. And we work really hard on kind of finding out the story behind things. So, you know, that's our approach.
Well, you're wrapping up 2021 with Welcome to Earth. You're beginning 2022 with the 80s Top 10 with Rob Lowe. What's the calendar like for you next year with your production company? What projects have you got coming up next year?
We have a huge show with a certain Australian called Chris Hemsworth that we have shot it all, and we are just finishing that right now. So that's going to be a big thing next year. We'll be working We hope to be doing some more adventures with Will, although that's in very early stages. We are doing a couple of documentary series for Netflix, which haven't been announced yet, so I can't tell you. But some big things, really. Yeah. The Chris Hemsworth show is called Limitless. They had a little trailer of it go out on the Disney birthday, and that was super exciting. Oh, and I'm forgetting another important one. In January, we'll be showing series 3 of World According to Jeff Goldblum, which is really exciting. We love Jeff Goldblum, and fun to be doing some more things with him.
Well, what do you think that's turned out to be one of Disney Plus's most popular nonfiction shows?
Jeff Goldblum. Two words, Jeff Goldblum. He's just so charming, and he so views the world in a completely different way. He kind of, I don't know, I grew up with him, watching him in big, kind of funny, scary horror movies and stuff like The Fly. But he brings that aliens approach, and you can just never really look at the world in the same way when you've been with Jeff Goldblum. So he's just like a little pick-me-up, a delight, I think, that makes you feel different about the world. He really does. It's a treat, I think, Jeff Goldblum. It's a little thing that, we always joke about, like, see the world in a Goldblum way. It's just a little special thing that he finds the strangeness in life and just loves it and celebrates it. And whether it's, he also, in this series, he brings his kids in, you have fun with his dog, he has fun with fireworks. He kind of does all this, there's a show about motorbikes. It's kind of just about the things that make you happy, really. And that's what Jeff is. I think in a world that can sometimes feel a bit grim, Jeff is like happiness boxed, you know. That's what makes me laugh about him.
He also has a great kinship, 6 Degree style, with Will Smith. Just check out Independence Day and you'll see what that's all about. And when it comes to Will Smith, remember,
absolutely,
Welcome to Earth is now running on Disney Plus, available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And the 80s Top 10 begins New Year's night, January 1st, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It's 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on National Geographic Television. Remember, if you want more details about both shows, for Welcome to Earth, www.disneyplus.com. And remember, check out Nat Geo channel on most cable and satellite systems. So check your local listings for where is playing your area on cable and satellite. More details about that service, natgeotv.com or nationalgeographic.com. Jane Root, executive producer on both series and the head of her own production company, Utopia. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks again. Congratulations on your new Will Smith adventure. Hopefully more to come. And good luck with not only the 80s top 10, but also everything else you got planned for next year. Should be a dandy.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Jane. Take care. Happy holiday season. A super new year ahead.
You too.
Jane Root joining us live from Washington, D.C. More tomorrow to televised coming away, but first some words to the fine folks at Oval.com. You know, we've been discussing Will Smith, that is, and his new Disney Plus series, Welcome to Earth. We've also got a new audiobook out called Will, and he narrates it. And you can get it right now if you have a one-month trial with Audible.com. Audible.com is, if you haven't heard, the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tune Radio, etc. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, a one-month trial, plus great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and great health and wellness information while it lasts. And remember, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, two audiobooks for the trial of one, including one from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. It's everything from original podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, great one-woman and one-man performances. So how about trying out audibletrial.com/televised and hear for yourself how audible.com can transform the way you or someone you love hears the world. It still makes a great holiday gift, and there's still time to get that holiday gift together through audible.com. Remember, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up in the next half hour, one of the most popular entertainment news journalists I know, Ray Richmond, will find out what's been happening with his latest book, That's Betty White, 100 Mark, One with Extraordinary Life. And we'll get his thoughts about the way entertainment, TV, et cetera, has been happening this year and what he thinks may happen next year. We'll join us live from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, spooky.com, tune.com. Together, reach over 65 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. it's the Possum Hour. It's unlike any entertainment radio show you hear anywhere. The Possum Hour, tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, kicking off your pre-Christmas week 2021. Tom Abbott, I'm with you live from New Web, New York, 52 degrees top of the hour. More guests coming away in the hour ahead, plus our classic trivia question of the week. We'll give you the answer to our current question before the top of this hour. And then our next half hour, a brand new question and a special announcement associated with it, too. So stay tuned for that. If you have questions for our guests coming up, ring them in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. It's a pleasure to welcome back to one of the best entertainment journalists I know. He writes everything from Deadline Hollywood Daily. He's been before for the Los Angeles Times, Orange County Register, Hollywood Reporter, et cetera. He is also the author of the best-selling book, Betty White, One Remarkable Moments in an Extraordinary Life. Joining us live from LA, Ray Richmond. Ray, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much, Simon. It's great to be here.
Same here. How have things been going with the Betty White book since we had you on a month ago?
You know, very well. Thank you. Part of the reason is, because of the promotion you gave me. But, yes, it's, you know, it actually was published officially. It dropped on December 7th, last Tuesday. And it did so well that it sold out in pre-orders on Amazon. So it that's the good news and the bad news. The bad news, of course, is that it hasn't been available on Amazon for Christmas ordering and delivery, but it's available on many other sites, including Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Awesome Books. There's still lots of places to get it and to get it in advance, but it's been incredibly popular. I'm very grateful. And part of the reason for most of the reason for the popularity, of course, is because of Betty. You know, she's just magical. Everything that she touches turns to gold, and I'm incredibly grateful to be associated with her in any way.
Has she seen the book and responded to it?
From what I gather, you know, she's been somewhat off the off the grid a little bit since COVID. She's really been somewhat isolated and quarantined with caregivers, and a bit frail, you know, as any 99-year-old would be. You know that she's turning 100 on January 17th, 100 years old. From what I get. I know that she has seen the book. It was given to her as part of a gift from some friends, you know, along with I think some chocolates, just so she could see it. And from what I gather, she has been incredibly grateful for and positive surrounding the book. And you know, I wish that she had been able to participate in an official way to the book, but you know, just given her condition and where she's at in her life, that wasn't possible. But you know, I feel like during the 6 months of putting together in the book and doing different drafts of the book, I feel like I've spent all that time with her. You know, that she's been part of me and part of this book, and has infused it with her own magic. So I feel very grateful.
I believe the story came out this morning in the Hollywood Reporter about talent in their 90s or their late 80s, Betty, Mel Brooks, Rita Moreno, and others who seem to have found the fountain of youth in terms of being able to still be out there, still be working, still be developing. Norman Lear, who's about to turn 100 also, just continuing to exercise their imaginations, whether it's in television or movies or other forms of entertainment.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, Simon, isn't it? I mean, you know, you used to hear about people retiring from show business in their 70s, and if they got to their 80s, it was a big deal. Now, here we have Betty. Of course, you know, I know all about Norman Lear and Dick Van Dyke and others who are still out there in their 90s, but no one has done it like Betty, where literally her 90s were a whole other career, you know, where she actually starred in a weekly sitcom, Hot in Cleveland, in her 90s. And, you know, one could make the point that no one has ever had that career run during a during that decade like she has. And not just doing it, but doing it incredibly well. I mean, those who worked on Hutt and Cleveland that I've spoken to will say that no one was there earlier on the set during rehearsals and tape days than Betty, where she would be there and would have everything committed to memory, would be ready and raring to go, much more so even than women 30 and 40 and 50 years younger than her. So, you know, she's really so extraordinary, one in a million.
Huh. Turning to where entertainment, where TV is at this year going to next year, did you think, given all the experience you've had covering the world of television, covering the world of entertainment, that you would have a year where both the Golden Globes and the Critics, which came out with their nominations today, and the Critics' Choice Awards, which came out with their nominations last week, would not have a single broadcast network program nominated?
You know, Simon, it's not a surprise, just because of the way television has so changed. I mean, you know, when I started as a TV critic back in the Neanderthal period of 1984, everything was the networks. I mean, cable was out. You know, it was starting to bubble underneath. But this was in the era even before Fox. It was ABC, NBC, CBS, and essentially almost nothing else. And, you know, they just had a stranglehold on the audience. And that slowly changed and evolved. And then, you know, 5-6 years ago, even cable started struggling, in addition to broadcast, where streaming took over and has taken complete hold now. But no, I never imagined that this is where the award shows would be, where the big shows, television would all be on a different medium. I mean, but, you know, it's the computer age. The networks are now struggling to remain relevant. I mean, they do things like doing, you know, reboots of old Norman Lear sitcom episodes, like Different Strokes and The Facts of Life. In order to do a gimmick. They've turned to gimmickry, the kind of gimmickry that cable used to do to try to remain relevant. So, you know, it's amazing. Now, any of the water cooler stuff, any of those shows that people talk about, they're all on streaming and some on cable, but the broadcasters are almost are just increasingly irrelevant, and they have to figure out a way to reinvent themselves.
You know, what really surprised me, and I mentioned this in our news notes last half hour, was that for the very first time with the Golden Globes, you can debate whether or not the Golden Globes have relevance now because they're not going to be on NBC next year. There's still the issue with the Hollywood Foreign Press Association and how they're trying to get their act together or not. But this is the first time that outside U.S. shows have a real chance in the drama category to take home the prize. You have Lupin, and both of them are from Netflix, Lupin from France, Squid Game, which is still the hot show of this fall anywhere, from South Korea, and both of them seem to be, could be favorites to take home that prize, not to mention the fact that Squid Game has also been nominated in the Golden Globes for Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor in a drama series.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and of course, the Hollywood Foreign Press is always trying to honor shows that are non-U.S. just by the very nature of their organization, because, you know, they represent international television in different countries. But yeah, it's a different world. I mean, the networks and U.S. networks and the U.S. in general just had a stranglehold on production, and now, I mean, I think it's very positive that there's it's evolved to the point where the wealth has been spread so widely. But yeah, you know, Squid Game has been the show that's had the most buzz and continues to, you know, just on a personal level. It's a very disturbing show for me to watch. I mean, so bloody, but incredibly powerful and disturbing. And the fact that it is difficult for me to watch speaks to the power of the production, you know, and any critic worth his or her salt is going to support this show because it's had such an impact. And rarely has a show had this impact with critics and the mainstream audience alike. But, you know, now in an era where you can just click a button and have whatever show and whatever film you want at your fingertips on your laptop, right on your desk, you know, it's such an interesting time.
Mm. We're speaking with the celebrated entertainment news journalist and author Ray Richmond. His latest book is Betty White, One Remarkable Moments in Extraordinary Life, which, by the way, we are offering as a classic trivia question prize, and we'll have that classic trivia question for you after this interview near the top of the hour. If a question are coming for Ray, joining us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, coming up on our episode Friday, we'll have Brian Bird, one of the executive producers of When Hope Calls. That's the When Calls the Heart spinoff. It originally was on Hallmark Movies Now, available on smart TV sets and devices. Now it's going to be starting this weekend with its second season on a news network, GAC Family, headed by former Hallmark Channel prez, Bill Abbott. Brian Bird of When Hope Calls, he's with us on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. What do you make going into this next year of this mega content era where you have Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Crackle? That's like what I call the first generation of these services. But now you have HBO Max, you have Apple TV Plus, you have Paramount Plus, et cetera, et cetera, Disney Plus, et cetera. Version 2.0 really underway.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really like, to some degree, it's really like nearly the same way as it used to be with when the new cable networks, when HBO and Showtime and FX and all these other, you know, and all these other networks started coming through. It's just that everything is now moved online to the streaming world. You know, HBO is still out there and relevant, especially with Succession. It's just everyone, you know, we're still paying for our television. We're paying for it in a different way, and it's not cable providers that are doing it, but streaming providers. So, it's really, to some degree, it's really not that different. It's still the age of cable. It's just the cable is now the idea of cable is now stretched to include include streaming as well. So it's, you know, pretty soon you're just going to be able to implant a chip in your head and be able to, you know, and touch something on your forehead and be able to watch things. I mean, you know, things that we couldn't have imagined. Think about it, just to bring it back to Betty White, Simon. Imagine when television came in the late 40s and she was a pioneer there. They couldn't have imagined even, you know, wide distribution of television in our living rooms. I mean, and it just, you know, it continues to evolve what technology has done for us. And, you know, it goes all the way back really to radio, where people thought, oh my God, to be able to hear things sitting there in front of a box in your living room, in your bedroom. So every generation has its own, oh my gosh, moments. And, you know, 10 years from now, I think streaming will be something that will say, wow, remember when streaming came in? Because there will be something new we can't even envision today.
Well, you know, Ray, and I'm curious your thoughts about this. Two of the things I'm taking away from this year in television, one is that smart TV set makers and device makers are no longer just carriers of content. They're becoming creators of content. You look at Roku, which just a couple of weeks ago gave Austin Weinberg, the creator of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, which was canceled earlier this year by NBC after two seasons, the opportunity to complete that show with the Christmas movie that just came out. And I understand it's gone gangbusters. But here's the thing. It's now becoming a TV series maker. They've already said, hey, you know, the next 2 years we're going to create 50 original television shows, and they've already created one that came out this past Friday called The Now from the Farrelly Brothers. And it was amazing, by the way, that not one entertainment trade journal, Variety, Deadline, Hollywood Daily, Hollywood Reporter did not cover that. It was a crazy bizarre press release. So it's like we're now seeing either these devices create individual shows, as in the case of Vizio and LG Smart Set, they're creating original channels that could become national services. The other thing is we now have these multi-channel bundles like Tubi, which is owned by Fox, which just bought Marvel Entertainment, the made-for-TV movie maker. You have Zumo, you got Pluto TV and so forth, and now they're getting into original content as well as putting together these ad-supported, what they call in the business, fast channels or on-demand channels. What do you make of this, that we're seeing this incredible shift develop in the last few, like, let's say, second half of this year?
What I make of this, Simon, is that content is king. Content is everything. You remember when cable first came in, they were basically repurposers of, you know, of old sitcoms and old dramas, and that's how they made their money. But they found that in order to get people to stay there, they needed to have new things. People, there's just such a great appetite for new that even device creators are getting in on the game. Everyone's getting in on the game. You know, 10 years ago, we couldn't have imagined that Amazon and Netflix, you know, Netflix was just, started out sending you VHS and then Blu-ray VHS tapes and Blu-ray discs. You know, we couldn't have imagined. I mean, go back to Blockbuster and how they dropped the ball. Blockbuster started out, you know, basically they made most of their money on people having late fees for bringing back tapes. And, you had Netflix coming to Blockbuster and saying, hey, why don't we join forces and, you know, maybe try to do this stuff by mail. And Blockbuster famously said, no, thank you. The stupidest decision ever in the history of entertainment. But yes, you know, it's all about content. It's all about original stuff. We have an insatiable appetite in this country for new. And, you know, especially as movie theaters because of COVID and other reasons, it's far more difficult for them to sustain their model of having people have a night out and come in and watch movies, unfortunately. I still think that we're still going to see movie theaters come back, but as that, you know, as they struggle, you know, the center of people's entertainment universe is the home. So everybody is getting in on the game in order to, you know, to have to capitalize on home entertainment.
We're speaking with Ray Richmond. He is the celebrated entertainment news journalist. His work has been published over the decades in so many places, from The Hollywood Reporter to more recently Deadline Hollywood Daily. He is also the author of a number of great books about the entertainment world, the latest being Betty White, 100 Remarkable Moments in an Extraordinary Life. If you have a question or comment for Ray in our final moments with him, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We're going to give you the answer to our latest Classic Trivia question coming up shortly. And then in our next half hour, we will have a brand new Classic Trivia question, and we have a special announcement associated with this question. So stay tuned for that. One of the things that I am troubled about, Ray, is the award show. I have a sense the award show is in big trouble. The Oscars, I don't know what you – I'd like to – first of all, like, what did you think of the Oscars, the Oscar telecast this year?
You mean the Oscar telecast at Union Station last year?
Yeah, this year, yeah.
Oh, I just thought it was – I it's funny. On Saturday night, I was having this very discussion with a friend. I thought it was dreadful. He actually liked it and liked the spareness of it and the intimacy of it. I just thought it was awful. It felt remote and dark and, you know, I understood, of course, that they had to do a different show in order to keep the Oscars going in the age of COVID. But I hated it. I concur with you that the award show is in trouble. We see all the problems that the Golden Globes and the Hollywood Foreign Press has had, you know, with corruption and such in their ranks. Interest in the Emmys, interest in almost all award shows, including the Oscars, has just continued to plummet. Younger adults, and forget teenagers and kids, younger adults and even middle-aged adults have just lost interest in this. It used to be such a conversation, you may recall, Simon, that everybody was like, ooh, what's going to win the Oscars this year? What's going to be nominated this year? And now that discussion just doesn't even happen anymore. And part of it is because content is so widespread. You know, it's just everywhere. It's not like there's a couple of different sources for us to debate. Now it's so vast that it's hard to even wrap your hands around the content and the original programming and film universe. So I think that's part of it, is that it's just grown too big, and it slips through our grasp in general. But, you know, I think in a large sense, the award shows have themselves to blame. They haven't really kept up with the times in terms of, you know, and the Emmys in particular haven't really kept up with the times in terms of what they should honor.
Yeah, I agree, and I'll go one step further. This is personal thought. I think the problem with the Oscars, and to some extent the issue of the Grammys, which used to be, which I think is one of the best, still the best award shows, although this year was a disaster, is this. Award shows are supposed to be about two things, you could argue. One is honoring the art, and the other is to empower people watching to see the art. And that's what the Oscars have not done for the last decade. It's become an inside baseball. Let's screw up America. Let's make it political. Let's be a soapbox for everything that you know, that just turns the audience off. And also, and along the way with this year's Oscars, you had no film clips of the nominees, which was crazy. The best film performances were taken off the show and put on a pre-show that nobody watched. Nobody seemed to have oversight, whether it was the Academy or ABC. And then you had, of course, the crazy situation where the Best Picture Award, which usually the final one, was put on earlier. Nomadland, who cares, won. But the thing was, it ended with the Best Actor. A lot of people thought Chadwick Boseman was going to win as a posthumous award. It turned out to be Anthony Hopkins for The Father. And they didn't have the decency to give him a Zoom camera so he could accept the award at 3 a.m. in the morning in Wales. And then the show just ended. It was embarrassing, and that's why the show almost had less than 10 million people watching. They were very lucky to get 10 million people. I just get a sense that if ABC, if this show does not do well, if this show can't rebound next year, I think this show's going on Hulu in 2023. And
I agree. You know what, Simon? Sorry to interrupt. In a larger sense, I feel like it's been going in this direction for a long time. I have always been kind of almost a lone voice in the universe that, yes, we need more clips and more things that really honor the art of film, honor the art of television for the Emmys. But I feel like they've shortchanged the winners for a very long time. I know everyone always rails about, oh, God, all these long-winded acceptance speeches. But it's like, this is an award show. It's supposed to be about acceptances. It's supposed to be about letting this person have their 60 seconds, if need be, in the spotlight. Let them say what they want to say. Yes, if they go long-winded for 2 or 3 minutes, yes, then strike up the band and cut them off. But to a large degree, you know, where they start the band sometimes 15 seconds into their speech, and it's like, really, come on, give people their due. This is an award show. Let them enjoy the moment. Let's revel in the moment instead of having it always be move, 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 move. Keep going, keep going, keep going. You know, what's the point of moving quickly and not centering it on the person's speech? So I feel like they've lost sight of what's important.
Yeah, I agree. And if I were to say some advice to the award winners, it would be this. Remember who your audience is. Remember who your audience is. Remember you're out to encourage them to see your movie. They want to see your love of the film. They don't want to see a political soapbox, no matter what the political soapbox is all about. They want to be empowered by you.
And one more thing about the Oscars, too, Simon, is – they should have – every winner that got up there should have said, go out and see the movies. Go to a movie theater. And the only one that I remember saying that was Frances McDormand. No one else seemed to care about directing people to go to movie theaters. And without movie theaters, the movie industry is going to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally got that. And again, it wasn't just it was the Grammys this year, which had musical sequences that frankly should not have been approved by CBS. Tony Awards even had some issues this year, even though it was on Paramount Plus for the first time ever, the first 2 hours at least. And the Emmy Awards, same thing. The award show people have got to get their act together, or else it's going to be off broadcast, and it's going to be on these mega content servers. And maybe that's where they belong. Maybe. Before we go, is there anything you're looking forward to watching in 2022?
Simon. Well, you know, there's a new Lord of the Rings series coming in September on Amazon Prime, you know, that they spent like $400 million on. It's just going to be incredibly lavish and beautiful and impeccably produced. I'm really looking forward to that. You know, I'm still an Olympics guy, and I love the Winter Olympics. I know it gets short shrift compared to the Summer Olympics, and that's coming in February. It'll be nice to see that. Hopefully, it will be as engaging as ever, even in the age of COVID. So I'm really, I'm looking forward to those. There's a lot of great stuff, you know, Ted Lasso, Dope Sick. There's still a lot of wonderful things that I love on in the streaming world, and I'm hoping maybe award shows can make a rebound next year, and they can figure out how to do them again and reinvent them.
Yeah, you mentioned Lord of the Rings. I did last Friday with Tracy Swedlow, our guest there, and I think that's going to be one of the most important shows to come on. So I'm going to say I think some of the new shows that Apple TV Plus is going to offer next year. I thought they had a fantastic lineup of new shows this fall. Invasion, which took out a second season. Foundation, the new Peanut special. Schmigadoon, which I think is a fantastic show. If you love musicals, and I'm very thrilled that the Critics' Choice, by the way, gave it the Best New Series nominee honor. Ariana DeBose, by the way, who I think is being touted, just got the Golden Globe nomination for Best Supporting Actress for West Side Story. See her number in Schmigadoon. It is one of the highlights of the year, along with Christian Chenoweth doing the pastiche on the Robert Preston number Trouble from The Music Man. Two of my favorite highlights this year were those two musical numbers, and just a fun show. So if I would say it's a buried treasure people should discover. It's Schmigadoon on Apple TV+. But I think next year Apple TV+, which had a great year this year, great comeback year, could break loose even more with some of the new shows they've got.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just amazing, Simon, that we're talking about things like Apple TV Plus and Paramount Plus, and you know this would have just been gobbledygook a couple of years ago. It's like it's just amazing how everyone has discovered the streaming universe, and thank God that they have, because what would we have had in the COVID age? We couldn't leave our houses. It's really enriched us. They didn't have during the flu pandemic 100 years ago. You know, we've been able to remain as entertained as ever through the streaming world.
Yeah. And by the way, you're going to see a lot more diversity on those services and elsewhere in television this year. You're seeing more and more new networks being put together by people of color running through smart TV sets and devices, and much, much more to come. There's a lot of very interesting ventures that have been started this year that I think have bear fruit, including BET Studios, the 25 Stories project that Viacom CBS is doing with Jenny Lumet and Alex Kurtzman of the Star Trek television shows, and the Disney Onyx collection too. So keep your eye on it. I think it's going to be a major trend. Also, interactive TV busting loose. And we'll have more to say about that next Monday with our guests from Hub Entertainment Research. Ray, how can people get in contact with you?
They can, I have my website, for my primary business is helping people write their memoirs and family histories, familysleuthmemoirs.com. And I hope they'll buy my book, my new Betty White book. It makes a wonderful gift and an amazing thing on your coffee table.
Yeah. And again, it's on one of my coffee tables at home, by the way, in Brooklyn. And we're going to be offering it next half hour, Classic Trivia Prize, so stay tuned. Our new question coming up in about a half hour from now. Ray, fantastic pleasure to have you again. Congratulations on how the Betty White book is doing, and let's do this entertainment TV talk soon. It's always a pleasure.
I love it. Thank you, Simon. Thanks for the return visit. Greatly appreciate it, and good luck to you.
You too, and a very happy holiday season, and all the greatest, and then some next year.
Thank you, sir. Happy holidays.
You too. Take care. Ray Richmond joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. Let's give the answer to the question we had posed the last 2 weeks, which was this. Perry Mason, it's all about Perry Mason. Raymond Burr was the first actor to play Perry Mason on a CBS television series. Who was the second? The answer is Monty Markham. In the 1973-74 season, he was the star of The New Perry Mason. A lot of people involved in the original series, including the original producers and the key to original director Arthur Marks, they were involved in the new series, but unfortunately, even though it had a great Sunday night time period, it was at 8 o'clock, I believe, on CBS, it failed after 16 episodes and was canceled and replaced by Apple's Way from the folks who did The Waltons. So the answer again, Monty Markham was the second Perry Mason on a CBS series in 1973-74. with the new Perry Mason. Coming up in our next half hour, we'll have a brand new classic trivia question, and we have a special announcement along with that. So stay tuned, because I think you're going to like what you're going to hear. But first, we're going to have the producer of a special premiering tonight on PBS, Thursday night on BYU TV. Jim Bell, from 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir, he joins us live from Provo, Utah, if we pause top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together reaching over 65 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, every weekday morning, including tomorrow, it's Kings in the Morning. Join Jay King and crew for great conversation, music, and a whole lot more. Kings in the Morning, tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be to our 24/7 at youtube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised. Well, those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, Tommy Abbott with you live from New River, New York. 51 degrees at the top of this hour. If a question or comment for our guest ahead, make that phone go, 646-652-2906, 646-652-2906. Number good anywhere you're catching yourself, the country around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio. Chat room is always available to you. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find that at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. You may be surprised to know that the oldest program on either radio or television is not Meet the Press. It's a program called Music and the Spoken Word. It's been on radio since the 1920s. There have been over 4,800 broadcasts. And since 1962, it's also played on television. In recent years, on Brigham Young University Television. It's the only national college university that still has a national television network. It's also available not only on cable and satellite, but on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And that program features one of the great musical groups anywhere. It was known as the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. It is now known as the Tabernacle Choir. Why? I don't understand. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, for the last 20 years, they've been doing a Christmas concert that has been carried on PBS, BYU TV, or both. And tonight on PBS, you can watch on many PBS stations a retrospective of that event, 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir. Joining us live from Provo, Utah, and interview exclusive, producer Jim Bell. Jim, happy holidays. Welcome to our program.
Happy holidays to you, and it's great to be here. It's an honor, really.
And it's an honor to have you here. And Jim, how did this Christmas tradition get started?
Well, the Tabernacle Choir has always done Christmas music. They've done, you know, different kinds of Christmas concerts. In 20 years ago, a new facility was opened called the Conference Center at Temple Square. It looks like an intimate concert hall, but it seats 21,000 people. And when that opened, the choir started doing the Christmas concert that we know today. PBS started airing it, and it's a 20-year tradition that airs every year on PBS to huge audiences. So that's the thumbnail version.
And what happens is that if it's 2019, the concert is taped, and then it runs the following year on PBS.
Yes, we do. The choir does a live performance over three nights. They tape each of those, and then they spend the year editing and sound sweetening and all the work that goes into it, and it airs a year later on PBS. And 5 years ago, BYU TV started a partnership where we air it 3 days after PBS airs it. So it will air tonight on PBS, as you said, and then Thursday night it'll air on BYU TV. And it'll be available on both digital platforms, and anyone in the world can watch it wherever they may be.
Now, what happened is that there was no concert last year because of the coronavirus pandemic and how the state was dealing with it. How soon after you knew, or people at the choir knew, we can't do it, so we can't give PBS a regular and BYU a regular special, how soon did they come to the conclusion, let's do a retrospective, let's check out the videos from the first 19 and see how we can put it into a two-hour special?
Yep. Well, the discussion started well before December of 2020. Choirs are super spreader events. They're one of the most effective ways to spread COVID. So the choir had shut down in, I think, mid-February of 2020. As the year went on, you know, we all started with the hope that this will pass in a few months. It didn't pass in a few months. And So the choir was on hiatus for many, many months. And kind of mid-2020, there were discussions around, okay, we can see pretty clearly we're not going to be doing a Christmas concert, so what does that do for PBS and BYU TV a year from now? We had a concert in the can with Kelly O'Hara and Richard Thomas, so we were covered last year, but it was probably mid-year that the discussion started and the idea was hit upon that, well, we could do an hour-long retrospective of the past 20 years, kind of a greatest hits. And that, as it was worked on, that evolved into a two-hour special, which is what people can start watching tonight.
When people see this special tonight, they will probably be very surprised and shocked at how these concerts play out. But more importantly, the talent that has been involved in these concerts from the start 20 years ago.
Yes. When you look at a list of, there have been about 40 different guest artists perform with the choir over the past 20 years. You have a vocalist, and then you have a narrator, and you have people like Alfie Bowe and Hugh Bonneville and Tom Brokaw and Kristen Chenoweth and Roma Downey and Renee Fleming and the Muppets. Santino Fontana performed with the Muppets from Sesame Street a few years ago. So there's just this vast array of talent. And I, as I watched it, and I've been involved with this for about 10 years, was like, wow, there have been so many amazing, talented people perform with the choir. And you would think a Christmas concert, what can you do new year to year? There's always something new. Part of it is the performers, but part of it is the repertoire, which Max Wilberg, the musical director, is so good at putting together. Every year is new and surprising, really. So quite remarkable.
20 years.
And if you don't mind.
The Tabernacle Choir, a.k.a. the Mormon Sorry, go ahead, Jim. You were about to say something, I think.
Well, I was going to go back to something you said in your lead into this discussion. The choir does a weekly live broadcast, a 30-minute production of Music in the Spoken Word. And if you can imagine, you know, people who know television know how much work goes into that. In the middle of all of that, they do a major summer concert and they do a major Christmas concert. And most organizations would say, you know, a weekly TV show is enough. We don't need to be doing, you know, a one-hour program for PBS in the middle of that. But the choir does it. They don't miss a beat.
And coming up, we're going to tell you some interesting thoughts about the choir and about these Christmas presentations that may blow your mind. 20 years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir, a.k.a. the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, premieres tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on many PBS stations. Remember, you need to check your local listing for not only the PBS station in your area, but when it plays. Some stations will play it tonight, others will play it later in the week or later tonight, and there will also be a second run during the weekend. And then you can also catch it Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on BYU TV. That's the national channel organized by Brigham Young University, which is available in more than 50 million homes on cable and satellite, also available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Jim Bell is one of the producers on the program. He joins us live from Provo, Utah this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Tom, I'm with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for Jim, don't be shy. Make that phone call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Before we go forward, we have a very special announcement. Near the bottom of the hour, before we wrap up, we're going to have our classic trivia question, our latest quiziest question segment, and we're going to offer a fifth prize. That's right. For the first time ever, five prizes are going to be in our jackpot, including the Betty White book from Ray Richman, and we're going to throw in the DVD of 20 Years of Christmas. We were able to get it at a special event here in New York last Wednesday at Fine Signs 54 Below, which was a great preview of the special. We were able to get a copy of the DVD. The DVD has bonus material, so stay tuned. We're going to offer that special DVD version as our latest classic trivia prize. So stay tuned after the interview before we leave you today, and you'll hear the new question. And if you're first with the right answer, you win that DVD. Jim, one of the things people may not know about the choir, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's all volunteer.
It is virtually all volunteer. There are a few paid positions. Mac Wilberg, Ryan Murphy, the musical directors, are full-time employees. There are about, I think, six full-time employees, and everyone else is a volunteer, from the choir members to the stage crew, the orchestra members, the dancers. It is an amazing volunteer organization. So when you watch it, everyone you see on camera, we do pay the guest artists, but with the exception of the guest artists, who do it for way under book value, I would say, it's a volunteer organization, which is really quite remarkable.
And when they are volunteers, I'll talk about the choir. Is it for just for a concert, or just for doing the music spoken word series, or is it for, let's say, a year or two?
All of the above. Oh, there are people who are in it for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. I believe it's a 20-year limit on the time you can be in the choir, and you age out at age 60. But these are people who are, they're coming up for rehearsals every Thursday night. They come in Sunday morning early for a rehearsal and then the live broadcast. And then there's an assortment of other concerts that are done throughout the year. The Christmas concert is the biggest, obviously. But these are people who, it kind of sounds like a full-time job. And at Christmas time, it's a lot of time these volunteers spend with the choir. It's a remarkable contribution.
And for the Christmas concerts, something else that I did not know about until I went to the event this past Wednesday here in New York, is that there are quite a few dance numbers, and we're talking really good choreography with dancers.
Yes.
I'm curious how you get the dancers to do what they do. Who does the choreography? Because it was not, unfortunately, at the event, it was not named who the choreographer was. I'd like to give that person credit, or person's credit, because these are really complicated. This is not just like get out there and do Rockette stuff. This is a really good choreography that you're on that stage for a good chunk of that musical number.
It's incredible choreography. The choreographers come from the Salt Lake area. They're volunteers. The dancers, they audition each year. Some will come back year to year. Some are new every year. And they range in age, I don't know the youngest, but I would guess 7 or 8 years old, in that range. They have some very young dancers, and then probably into the early 20s. You know, they're the best of the best. There's a lot. I have two granddaughters, not to date myself, but they're remarkable dancers in the Utah dance community, and they're getting just the very best dancers. And these kids are learning these dances in very short order. There is not a lot of rehearsal time. And so the choreography happens, the kids learn the dances, and you'll see in the show tonight, there's a processional as the dancers and performers come in, and then throughout the concert, there are different numbers that you'll see on stage as the choir and orchestra are performing.
With so much material going back 20 years to pick from, how did the selections get picked?
You know, it was tough, and there were a couple of issues. One is we didn't want it to be, you know, just short, you know, 10-second clips of song after song. So there are some songs you'll hear in their entirety. There's some you'll hear, you know, a part of, and you may or may not realize you're only hearing a part. But there's kind of a story that weaves throughout the two-hour program of what goes into putting this show together, and also storylines that convey the spirit of Christmas that we want to convey through the choir. So it was, and I mean, you think about 20 years, on PBS, you see a 1 hour edited version of a 90 to 100 minute performance, you know, that you see live, and on BYU TV, this isn't true this year because everyone will see the 2 hour. But on BYU TV, we show the concert in its entirety, compared to PBS that shows 1 hour. But obviously, you times that by 20, that's a lot of material. And there, David Warner was the kind of producer director who oversaw the creation of the program, and he's busy with the we're doing a TV taping this weekend, and he's tied up with that, so you kind of get me. It was a lot of picking and choosing, but doing so in a way that there's a story that unfolds throughout the performance.
And what's also great, too, is the wide variety of music. It's not just Christmas carols. It's not just Christmas hymns or religious songs. There's pop. There's sometimes rock.
Yep.
There's opera.
Yep.
There's jazz. You've had guest artists like Gladys Knight, Natalie Cole, opera singers like
yep.
Renee Fleming. You've had actors like Edward Herrmann, John Rhys Davies,
mm-hmm.
Norma Dowling, Peter Graves, Claire Bloom, Michael York. It's an
mm-hmm.
amazing collection of talent, and it's like these concerts are like every musical style for anybody.
Yeah, you've got there's a long, long list of the songs that are featured in the program. It goes from Joy to the World to My Grown-Up Christmas List to My Crazy Christmas List, I'll Be Home for Christmas, Hallelujah Chorus, The Candyman. We'll do some Broadway show tunes, Ring Those Christmas Bells that Kristen Chenoweth just knocked out of the park, The 12 Days of Christmas, which was a sing-along with 21,000 people singing along, if you can imagine. Yeah, there's something for everyone in the repertoire that you'll see tonight and that you see year to year. There's a lot of variety. Mac Wilberg, the musical director, is a musical genius. I asked him what his hobbies are, and his hobby is when he travels, he goes to used bookstores and finds books on music. And he'll unearth, you know, songs that haven't been heard in 100 years. And he cultivates, there's a word that's escaping my mind at the moment, but he just puts together this amazing repertoire where there, in any given show, and certainly in the show you'll watch tonight, there's something for everyone.
Yeah. And the show we're talking about is 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir, a.k.a. the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, for those of you that knew it when it was way back when then. Still one of the most famous
change.
Musical groups in the world. And the program is running tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern time on many PBS stations, to Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern on BYU TV, available on cable, satellite, and smart TV sets and devices. Jim Bell is one of the producers on the program. We have him for a few more minutes. If you have a question or comment in our remaining time with him, give us a call, 646-652-2906. We use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. And coming up shortly, our new classic trivia question of the week. If you're first with the correct answer, you can win a DVD of this special with bonus content as well as our other four prizes, the Betty White book, also the unofficial Hocus Pocus cookbook, a Freak Brothers T-shirt, and a Loud House crayon segment courtesy of Nickelodeon. Now, there's another special surprise, which is that Brian Stokes Mitchell, some of you may remember him for his co-starring role in Trapper John. Indeed, one of the top Broadway stars. He won a Tony Award for Christmas Kate. He's been nominated several other times for the Tony. He is not only the host of this show, but you actually had him do last year, despite the coronavirus situation, you did a Zoom number with him and the choir.
Well, he came to Salt Lake. We followed all the COVID protocols. We kept him safe and warm and happy. He narrates the program. There's a storyline with him that he was in the conference center, which was empty, and he tells the story, and then he does some additional numbers in the program. He does a song that that I'm looking for the name of it. I'm sorry. He does a couple of solo numbers with Mac on the piano that are just wonderful. But yeah, he was in Salt Lake and did the narration for the story that you'll see tonight.
Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to say that for all you Stephen Sondheim fans out there, given the fact that he passed away a number of weeks ago, yes, there is a Stephen Sondheim number from Sweeney Todd. A wonderful tune done by Angela Lansbury with the chorus called Not While I'm Around. I saw that when originally Sweeney Todd was a video presentation with her co-star at the time, George Hearn. It's still one of the best Broadway renditions of a show for television with brilliant Emmy-winning direction by Terry Hughes. Somebody should play that on YouTube somewhere, Sweeney Todd. So if you missed out on that wonderful video presentation back in the early 1980s on the Entertainment Channel or on YouTube, checked out her rendition here. And I believe that was from 2001 or 2011 after the after 9/11. And it has special significance even more for that.
Yes.
But I've seen a clip of it. It's a really amazing stuff. Now, as far as this year is concerned, for 2022, you are going to have a concert.
We are doing what we're calling a television taping. We really cannot, we don't feel like it's responsible to put 21,000 people in the hall night after night. And so we're doing a TV taping for 2022. So you'll see that on PBS and BYU TV in 2022. And again, we'll do it over three nights. The work that goes into shooting and editing this special is remarkable. We tape three nights, the full performance. Then we do a Saturday afternoon taping of selected pieces. And so the editors are sitting down to four different, you know, nights and days of this, of a 90-minute program and putting things together. Everything is done live. Nothing is, you know, lip-synced or recorded to track. And so Mac Wilberg will, you know, he'll take a song and he'll take these three measures from Thursday night and the next 20 measures from Friday night and somewhere in there a measure or two from Saturday night. So the editing process is remarkable. And both the video editing and the sound editing is it's a year-long project to get it right, to get it to broadcast quality. So,
like Cinerama back in the 50s and 60s, you know, the movie projection system, which had three movie projectors running at the same time, and you had to get it all together to get the light screen picture. So it has that kind of feel to it.
Yep. So, yeah, there will be a performance. The sad thing is, and it really is sad, because this is the tickets are free to this performance every year. Getting a ticket to the choir Christmas concert year to year is probably the toughest ticket to get in Utah. And this year we'll be doing it without the full audience, and hopefully next year we'll be back to normal. So that's my hope.
Yeah, a lot of other people's hope. I believe Megan Hilty was just on Annie Live last week, is going to be one of the performers this time for the 2022 event.
Yep, she is coming to town. And I'll tell you, as people watch the show tonight, and you know, whenever they watch it, something to know is the guest artist arrives on Tuesday. He or she, and really it's they, because you have the vocalist and then a narrator, they have basically Wednesday evening to rehearse with the choir, and then they start Thursday night with the live performances. So that's something that, as well as I knew the choir, I was stunned at the really limited amount of rehearsal time that these performers have, that the guest artists have. But it always comes off without a hitch.
If you want a holiday special that is definitely family-friendly to the max and musical too, 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir is right up the alley. It premieres tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, on many PBS stations across the country. Check your local listings for where PBS is in your area. Also check when they're playing it. Some will be tonight. Some will be later this week. Some will have a second run during the weekend, et cetera, et cetera. More details about how you can find it online, pbs.org. And then Thursday, the program repeats, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on BYU TV. That's the network of Brigham Young University. They have on cable, satellite, as well as smart TV sets and smart devices. So check the local links for where BYU is available in the area and how. More details about that service, byutv.org. 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir. Jim Bell, producer of the program, thank you, Ian, for joining us. Congratulations to you and everybody involved. Also, WGBH, the producing station as well, for making it happen. And look forward to have a great time tonight and later in the week on BYU TV, and hopefully next year we're all back with a fantastic Christmas concert.
We sure hope so. That's the plan.
Great. A super plan it is too, Jim. Take care, everybody, where you are. Have a wonderful holiday season and a superb 2022.
Thanks for having me, Simon. It's been a pleasure.
A pleasure. Take care. Jim Bell, producer of 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir, joining us live from Provo, Utah. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. And once again, we are going to be offering now a fifth prize in play, and that is the DVD of this PBS BYU TV special with bonus content. And it's all yours if you know the answer to this classic trivia question. On what ABC series did John Ritter star as a cop? On what ABC series did John Ritter star as a cop? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to close your name and where you're emailing from. First direct answer, you win all five prizes, including the DVD of 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir, with bonus content included. If we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Once again, the question, on what ABC series did John Ritter star as a cop? Get in the game today. And remember, all the very best. Thanks to all of our guests for being here today for a great 90 minutes with you. We'll be back on Friday. And joining us will be Brian Bird, the executive producer of the GAC Family Series, formerly of Hallmark Movies Now, When Hope Calls. And don't forget, next week, our Christmas week triple header, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, all starting at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, including all of our episodes from this year so far, go to blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And check out our podcasts. They're available 24/7, anytime you like, at the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Verbal, Reason, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music. Love to hear what you learned about today's program. What's your thoughts for our TV's at and where it's going? You have a favorite show you're looking forward to next year? And what's your thoughts about TV's best and worst? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. I do respond with your emails in 24 hours. You also find me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, we always want to hear what you've got in your mind when it comes to television, and we do respond within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. And once again, we join everybody at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, et cetera, in thinking the greatest for everybody being impacted by the tornadoes that hit the Midwest this past weekend. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not affiliated those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website maintenance provided by PodSite, the internet's new podcast destination. For more, you go to podsite.io. That's podsite.io. Our web coordinator is guitarist Bacon. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two and much more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great holiday gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your week. We are back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates, including the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to between now and then, please make it safe, make it great, keep those thoughts and prayers going for the people dealing with the aftermath of those tornadoes. And if you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, check your medical records, and then make a great choice. And remember, it's your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.